Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 188 of The Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, and I am here on the day after Christmas with Megan Woo-hoo. Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Merry Christmas. I hope it went smoothly. We don't know because we actually aren't recording this the day after Christmas.
Let's assume that we can say, as you said so wisely recently, that was hard, but we're okay.
Yeah, we made it.
And
I feel like this episode is like a gift to everybody because a lot of people take breaks at Christmas.
Yeah.
We do.
Podcasters, you mean? Like, yeah.
Right, yeah. A lot of those people take breaks. But a lot of podcasts do go on break, and we decided not to because we wanted to kind of give you guys a little something. I know, you know, you got a lot of cleanup to do, maybe some
travel.
More alone time than usual, less alone time than usual travel. Right, you're out of your usual routine. And so this is a way to kind of keep in touch with that routine a little bit. But it's going to be fun because we're doing a look back at our favorite episodes, and not just our favorite episodes, but your favorite episodes.
It's mostly you guys' favorite episodes of 2018. A little retrospective. We're going to play some clips of just some of the best moments of the show. It's something we've wanted to do and haven't done yet. So we're really, really excited. And yeah, we can't skip a week, guys. We haven't skipped a week in like, I don't know, 3 years.
Not only have
something.
We not skipped a week, we actually almost did 2 episodes a week this year.
Yeah.
Didn't you say it was 90 episodes?
We did 90 episodes. In fact, this is our 90th. This is officially the last show of 2018.
In 1 year.
Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no-questions-asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing 1 packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure, I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality, they last forever, and I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay Heeled Sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 Classic Sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa Slip-On Flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa Slip-On Flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
So shall we look back at the last year of content?
Yeah, let's do it. Are you going to help set this up?
So I am. So the first episode that we're going to feature some clips from is 161. Okay. Hey, Sarah, by the way, one thing I'm very proud of in 2018 is I finally became comfortable with saying 161 rather than 161. Remember when we switched into the triple digits, how hard of a time I had with that?
Yeah, I can't even confirm that that happened in, I think it was maybe midway through 2018. I think sometime in 2018, you stopped being awkward about three digit numbers.
I always had to be 41 years old before it happened. No, it's like every time I'd go to, I'd be like, you know, we switch back and forth who sets up an episode, but I would say, hello, you know, hey everyone, welcome to the Mom Hour, episode 119 of the Mom Hour. It's like, it felt so weighty. I wanted to give it the proper weight and now I'm just over
and
it.
And I would just sit there and smile.
Yeah, we're moving under the 200 soon enough.
So 161.
161. And the episode's title was The Life-Changing Magic of Opting Out. And this was very widely, like a big one in our community, people calling for it. But one of my favorite things is every now and then I forget how once you discover that you don't have to do something for the first time, how revolutionary that feels. Mm-hmm. And then you get used to it and you're just like, oh, of course I don't do that. Like, I don't fold underwear. Why would I do that? Yeah. Like me, I don't, you know, I don't buy school pictures unless I feel like it. Yeah. Right. So, but the first year that I made that choice, how big that felt.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes another mom, like even showing you that it's an option. Like, wait, I didn't know that I could opt out of homework. Well, yeah, you can if you want.
Yeah. So we're going to play you guys some clips. And I have to say, one of the things that really stood out at me is this, like, that everything changes. And so what you're opting out of right now may actually be seen as good parenting to opt out of later. So
you think you're making like a renegade
choice. Choice, but like your counterculture renegade choice could be the thing in 2 years or 5 years or 10.
Right.
So like you could be like a trendsetter, or you could be, you know, Rico write a book about it. Like you could just be ahead of your time. A and B, if you just are not doing something because you just don't want to.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have found, and I think I speak to this in one of these clips, is like if I consistently don't want to do something or fall down on the job or feel bad about the way it's turning out when I try, me deciding as a choice, I'm 100%. Not going to do that flips the script.
Yep. Like 100%. Yeah. That was me with folding pajamas. And I use that example. It's like you just give yourself permission to say, I don't do that thing, instead of beating yourself up for not doing it. Right. So nothing has changed except the way you explain it to yourself in your mind.
Yeah. And then the way you talk about it on a podcast, if you have a podcast.
Yes, exactly. So you guys are going to hear a few different clips from this episode. And we had so many people say that this was one of their favorites. We also had Coffee and Crumbs, our friends over there, did an entire episode on the things they don't do inspired by this. So keep the conversation going. More of us need to talk about what we don't do, I think.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get into it.
The whole point of opting out to me is like figuring out the things that don't add value to your life as a mom and figuring out a way to not do them or outsource them. And we'll talk about that. But like there's several things that I don't do that if the mom down the street does, I think that's amazing. And I don't know. I feel like we've said this before, but it bears repeating because it's totally okay if you are 100% into something that we've opted out of.
I totally agree. And I will say two things. One, some of the things that I opted out of was more about me just never getting around to doing them or finding myself always resisting them and then finally making peace with that. So it's not like I went into each one of my opt outs like, I therefore claim that I shall opt out of XYZ. It was more like I found every time this thing rolled around, this time of year or whatever this activity was, I just wasn't into it, or when I did it, I felt like I didn't do a good job or took away from something else I wanted to do more. And then, so I kind of backed into a lot of these. And I think to your point, Sarah, we can't all do all the things.
No.
But it's so easy to look around and see the cumulative, like the cumulative results of many people doing many things.
Right.
And to think that that means every mom is doing all of them. And that's not true. Like, it's just not the case. So just because there are beautiful photos that one mom took of, like, say, a recital, and you got there late, you were sitting so far in the back, and then you forgot to take your camera out or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean, like, literally every mom was doing it. It means that, like, a couple did. And so there's just, that's just, like, one kind of example off the top of my head. But I just feel like we tend to think that everyone's doing all of it.
And I agree.
It's just not true. And then by like, either deciding ahead of time to opt out, or by embracing the fact that you already kind of by default did, and just give yourself some grace, like, you just take some of that guilt away from it.
You do. And yeah, I was going to say that as well. Like, it's just a mental shift, but instead of feeling guilty that you're not doing something, you've just internally declared that you don't do that thing. And let me say something else. I think it's really good for our kids to see us setting boundaries. And we're going to talk about really silly stuff, so I feel like we're making this into a bigger deal than it is. But it's not bad for our kids to see us setting boundaries and saying, like, oh, you know, I don't do that, or I, you know, I've found a way for someone else to do that. And it's not super healthy for our kids to think that we are all powerful and can do everything. I think it's really good for kids to see us making choices about where and how to spend our time.
I totally agree. And I also, before we launch in, I want to say one quick thing about judgment, because I know it's so hard to go through life as a mom without worrying that people are noticing every move you make and judging every move you make. And I think people really don't notice the things you don't do as much as you think that they do. I mean, they might notice the things you do, especially if you make a big deal about it. Yeah. But like, if you're just not at something, like some event, or if you didn't say dress your kid in like tie-dye on tie-dye day or whatever it is, you know, most of the time people are not going to go out of their way to notice.
No,
and and they've all got their own stuff going on. Like, everyone's thinking, we're all thinking about ourselves and our own families most of the time, and worrying that people are looking at us. So we're not really looking at what you are doing or not doing. And so, you know, and if someone does judge you for it, like, that's on them. Like,
that's on them.
Not everyone's opinion has to matter to you either.
Well, not only that, but they are probably noticing the things you're doing and thinking they're falling down on the job. Like, it goes both ways. So
it really does. Yeah, it's funny. It just reminds, it's so funny how like things come in and out of fashion. It's just like, you look back over 20 years of me as a mom. What was like everybody doing 20 years ago? What were some people doing 20 years ago? How long did it take some people to start doing the other thing? You know, it's like,
it's the waves.
It's so funny to see. Yeah, the waves. And like, I don't even know where everyone falls with like V-backs, but I remember like every time I got pregnant, and I didn't ever have a cesarean, but I was always curious.
Yeah.
Every pregnancy I would kind of like feel the waters to see how people felt about V-back. And I swear from pregnancy to pregnancy, it was different every time. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, that's just one example. Yeah. Or like gestational diabetes testing, all these things, like how early should you have your first ultrasound? Everything from pregnancy on either flip-flopped or slowly arced.
Yeah.
And like came, so, you know, in 10 years, if you're listening to this and it's 10 year, it's the year 2028, maybe baby led weaning is out and everyone's feeding their babies rice cereal again. I don't know. You know, it's just, they all turn out. I'm not gonna say they all turn out okay. That's, you can't say that. But like most of the time, the way you do things is going to be fine. I think we can all like, we can all probably agree that the school picture industry is a little outdated.
Yes.
And I just didn't want to play that game anymore.
I think that's a great opt out. And I would add that, think about the photo, the professional photo opt outs. There's lots of them. Like when you're at Disneyland, for example, and there's like, there's pressure to get the photo, the Santa photo. I'm actually going to talk about that when I talk about a Christmas opt out in a minute. But you don't have to buy the pictures, guys. That's just a general opt out.
You don't have to take your baby in at the 3 months, 6 months.
Yes, yes. Like,
you don't have to you don't have to pose your baby every month on their month birthday with
a
sign.
No,
you don't have
you
to
don't.
Do any of that stuff. Like none of that stuff happened until people had like internet.
Yeah.
Till Instagram. And I promise you, you know, like earlier generations of children were not deprived because they don't have a picture of themselves sitting with a sign when they were 5 months old.
Totally.
It's and just not a thing.
The freedom of opting out is it makes room for you to do other things. So maybe there's some other way that you want to mark the passing of the new school year with a photo, or maybe, but you don't have to do all the things. That's again, we come back to that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not trying to knock anybody who takes those pictures. They're really cute. I love seeing other people's, but I just, what I am very bothered by sometimes is just the amount, like the mounting pile of obligations that are related to specific timelines or milestones or, and there's so many of, it's like you can't even get through a day without having something you're supposed to do today because today is X day.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know.
I hear you. Blah. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you feel like is like the takeaway from that? Like, as I don't want it to be like, just don't go to awards assemblies.
I think the takeaway is, especially for our younger, newer moms, if you're entering school parenting, it's easy to feel like we said at the top of the show, it's easy to feel like every parent is showing up for everything. And we're actually at a very small school where there's a ton of parent involvement, and I'm very involved. So I'm there a lot, but I'm not there for everything. And I almost feel like it's a badge of honor. Like people don't know who I am because I hide in the library and that's my volunteer job. And like, right. I make it very clear that like the stuff that I show up for, I want to really be there for. And mm-hmm. I think if you're in an area where there's pressure to be super, super involved and be there for everything at school, just know that not everybody is. And you might be making a full-time working single mom feel better about herself by helping lower the bar a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Our standards can relax a little bit, I think.
Nobody noticed that I wasn't there.
Exactly. So yeah,
including my sister-in-law, who's a teacher there. She had no idea that I wasn't there. She was his teacher this year. And that also added like another kind of level of like, ugh, should I come? Because no, it's important to, it's important to the people it's really important to, but that doesn't mean it has to be important to everybody.
Also, so, when you show up for fewer things, your kids are really excited when you're there. I will say that.
True.
Like, it's not a given. And I think that's everything we talked about, like school parties, field trips, whatever. All right. So we're back and we're going to talk about probably our top requested interview or top listener favorite interview of the year. So as you guys know, we do interviews once a month. We actually did 11. We didn't do a brand new interview in December. So we did 11 Voices interviews this year. And we're just really grateful to all of the moms, women who joined us on the show. But the interview that came up as the one that everybody talked about is my conversation with Kate Rope, who's a journalist and an author, and she wrote a book called Strong as a Mother, and it has her own experience with postpartum anxiety and postpartum struggles. But then she did a ton of research, and it is a fantastic book. And the people who wrote to us and said, oh my gosh, no one's ever explained it that way, or this speaks to my experience. So that was huge. I mean, it's really important to us that we take on these bigger, tough topics that, Megan, you and I can't speak specifically to all of them from our own personal experience. So I just feel really good that this conversation happened and that so many people related to it.
I loved listening. This was like a light bulb moment for me, listening to her talk about like the scary thoughts or disturbing thoughts mm-hmm. you might have about your baby and how those can come up. And it made me think about, honestly, we've all had the feeling where we're standing on like the edge of a high cliff or something.
Yep.
And we think, what if I shove that person off?
Yes.
And we all know we're not going to shove the person off the cliff, but we think about it, right? Like there's that moment. But because it's some random stranger or a friend, we just think, oh, that's funny. Yeah. And we move on. But the way that sometimes people have scary thoughts about their kids, it kind of comes from the same biological place. Mm-hmm. It's like a reaction to danger, or like it's creating dangers that don't exist so that in your mind, you can work through that danger.
Yeah.
And then, so it's not having the thought that's the problem, because the vast majority of us have it. The key is then, do we let that thought
change our behavior?
Do we let it change our behavior? Do we let it make us freak out and then feel bad about ourselves? How does it spiral?
Yeah.
And that I had never thought about it that way before.
Yeah. No. And that the clip that we're going to play speaks to that. And I think that was a huge light bulb moment for a ton of parents. And I will say also, if you are past the postpartum period, but you have any kind of experience with you or someone you love with any kind of anxiety disorder or any kind of compulsive thinking, this is really, really research-based, but very accessible information from Kate. And so, it was a great episode.
Love it.
Even before you have babies, these are thoughts you might have had. You know, you're standing on a subway platform and you wonder, what if I jump in front of that train? Or you're driving down the road and you think, what if I veered into the oncoming traffic? It's our brain's way of kind of protecting us and mm-hmm. testing out scary theories. The number one expert on this is a guy named Jonathan Abramowitz at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And he and I talked a lot, and he said, you know, the things we tend to have the things that kick these thoughts up are things that are important to us. So mm-hmm. it's like, hello, babies, you know, and our job is to keep them alive. And so immediately we are evolutionarily programmed to scan for threats.
Yeah.
And there aren't any saber-toothed tigers around, right? So the threats are kind of more immediate, and the threat can be yourself. You could worry that you're going to drop the baby. You could even have a thought like, what if I took that knife and stabbed my baby?
Yep.
You could have that thought, and that doesn't mean you're going to do that. It's just you see a knife, you're holding your baby, you recognize there could be potential danger there, and your brain puts it together.
Yep.
And he even gave me the example of you could be changing your child's diaper and think, what if I molested my child? Because that's a huge fear as a parent. Yeah. So it's like your brain is searching out the possible dangers and trying to sift through them and avoid them. So that's normal. 99% of parents, well, actually, I think the actual stat is 91%, but I think it's got to be almost like 99% of parents have those thoughts.
That's a big enough number that I want to just pause for a second. That's so normal that more than 90% of parents have those thoughts. I think there's so many listeners right now who really probably thought they were the only one.
Yeah, no, totally normal. And if you start bringing it up around people, you'll start hearing about it. You know, like, do you ever think this weird thing? I have these weird thoughts, you know? Oh yeah, me too, you know?
Yeah.
So yes, it is totally normal to have those thoughts.
And then is there a point at which that can kind of be cross over into the type of anxiety that maybe needs some more attention?
Yeah. So what matters is not the thought. In evaluating whether or not you have an anxiety disorder, it doesn't matter what that thought is. The thought is not the key to it. The key to it is how do you respond to that thought?
Okay.
Do you worry that you're a really bad person because you had that thought? Do you start to obsess that you might do something to your child because of these thoughts you're having? Are they taking up so much of your brain space, as they were for me, that it makes it difficult to function in your life?
Right.
It's about sort of how you respond. Are you starting to do things to try and control the thought? Like, let's say your worry is, I'm worried I'm going to drop my baby down the stairs. So you start asking your partner or your mom or whoever's around to take your baby down the stairs because you're worried that you're going to drop the baby.
Right.
So you're altering your behavior to protect the baby. And then the problem with that is that the baby doesn't fall down the stairs and you begin to think, oh, it's because I'm no longer carrying the baby.
Right.
So it sort of like feeds itself.
Right.
So you're kind of constantly seeking information. For me, it was going online and looking up symptoms possible illnesses. You know, I've talked to a lot of moms for whom there's like a car seat thing that happens. They get in the car and they check and recheck that their baby is in the car seat or that they're not in the driveway and they're about to run them over. So if you start to alter your behavior, if it starts to change how you perceive yourself, if it starts to just make it difficult to function, then those are all signs that you're experiencing an anxiety disorder or potentially a little bit of obsessive compulsive disorder, which is very close to anxiety. They're very tied.
Right.
And there are really good treatments for both of those. Cognitive behavioral therapy is very effective, as is regular individual psychotherapy. And then there's medication. So for me, I did, and often a combination of those.
Right.
So for me, I did therapy and medication, and the medication calmed my brain down enough to be able to engage in therapy in a productive way because I was thinking more clearly and I could say, that is a really unlikely scenario that I'm playing out in my head.
Okay, so guys, we have talked on the show a few times about mom friends, and it is one of those things that constantly gets brought up. Like, your questions often are about mom friendship. We've had a request to do multiple shows about mom friendships, and we've done more than one, I want to say, but just in the last year, and this was a very highly requested kind of look back episode, was episode 144, The Myth of the Mom Tribe. And I think why people really love this one is because we talk about, like, we kind of bust those myths that we all have, sort of that the ideal or even the goal to shoot for is this completely, like, I don't know, this big mom tribe where everyone's kind of in the same place and everyone's got each other's backs and everyone gets together for
it's a sorority.
Coffee. It's a sorority. Like, it's like we're all trying to recreate the sorority like most of us didn't have in college in motherhood. And that's not how it's played out for me. And I'm sure that's not how it's played out for you, Sarah. And so we kind of bust that myth a little bit.
Yeah. And then my favorite part of this episode, actually, this is a good re-listen if you want to go re-listen to the whole thing. Cause the second half we talked about the type of
the types of friends that every mom needs. And yeah. I remember just when we were titling the episode that it really was kind of both. Like in the first half, we talk about this idea of the mom tribe, and then we go into really what types of friends kind of nourish a mom's soul. And that part was so fun. So it's a great episode. Maybe this is just me, but this is how I feel like the internet and social media has made mom friends seem. I feel like we're sort of sold this story that everybody's got like a tribe, like a big group of mom friends that you go to girls' nights out with, you have big play groups with, you go on fun vacations, and you have this like big group sort of uniformly formed and full of the same kind of friendships. And if you don't have that tribe, then you ought to be on the lookout for one. And I feel like maybe that's come out of, you know, people really do have these wonderful supportive groups of friends, and we're totally not going to be knocking that. But I just feel like it's a little more dynamic the way these things ebb and flow over the course of your life. And I feel like somehow this tribe has become not artificial, but this like,
it's a mythical thing.
This
it's like
mythical
this,
thing. Yeah. That's a great
it's
word.
A legend. Yeah.
This legendary thing that we all need to be on the hunt for. So I kind of wanted to unpack that a little bit and just maybe reassure our listeners that not everybody has a big tribe. Not all tribes are as maybe as, I don't know, tight as they seem.
Yeah, I was going to say close, and also not as active, because I know a lot of people do have tribes that barely ever see each other, you know, and your tribe might be made up of a lot of people who don't interact with each other.
Right.
So your personal tribe could be five people who never speak.
That's definitely, we're going to get into kind of how our friendships have worked. But I definitely feel like I have the support of a tribe, but they're not actually people who hang out with each other. They're just people who fill my various friendship needs. So I don't know. Lately we've been hearing from listeners that this is kind of a pain point. Like, you know, I asked recently on social media, like, what's one thing you're struggling with right now as a mom? And a big one was, I feel like I haven't found my people. And a lot of it is because maybe I had kids later than my friends, or I had kids earlier than my friends, or now I'm staying home and I was in the corporate world for so long. And so now I need to, quote unquote, find my tribe. So I think that's kind of just what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes, is whether or not that's like as simple as it seems from the outside. And, you know, I don't think that it is. So
no, it's not. Well, it's one of those, it's one of those imaginary aspirational things that gets kind of created on the internet and then sort of reinforced over and over again in social media. And so then you get the idea that everybody else really has that. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you or wrong with your situation. And so we like to bust those myths up whenever we can. In those days, I was just a little more, I needed more support, about things that like later I kind of just realized were normal, you know, like I really needed to sit and talk to other moms about teething and diapers and potty training and all and weaning and all those things. Like I really needed,
I think most people do. I think that's a really common.
Sure.
And then maybe it's that when that kind of stuff falls away, you're left with sort of the golden nuggets of one or two friendships that really, really deserve to be built on top of that foundation and go beyond, and the rest can kind of fall away.
They just serve their purpose. You know, there are conversations. Yeah. I remember sitting in a group of moms having great conversations, and I can't picture their faces and I can't remember their names, but I know that that was important and helpful and formative for me. It's just that, you know, people come in and out of your life all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like what's that old saying? Sometimes they're there for a day. And sometimes they're there for a lifetime. So,
no, I think that's a really, really good point. If you feel like you don't have a tribe, I just going to offer a couple final thoughts. And we've touched on these, but one is kind of redefine tribe. You mentioned your online community, Megan, and I think that can be really helpful. If there's a part of your friend life that feels less fulfilled, it may be something that can be filled online by joining an online community or like taking an online class. I'm never one to recommend that all of your relationships exist online, but I think that's a really meaningful source for inspiration, for connection. And so if there's something that's not happening for you locally, see if it maybe exists online. And I think the reverse is true. If there's something that's, if you're feeling like online is where everything is, maybe doing something locally would scratch that itch. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, no, totally. And I should have mentioned that, you know, online has been a huge part of my experience as a mom.
Yeah.
Those online communities for the whole time.
Yeah.
20 years.
You were
started off
adopter.
As forums and then it kind of switched to email lists. And then now it mostly takes place on Facebook, just like everything in the world mostly takes place on Facebook. And I think that the trick is just, you know, one thing I have heard is that there seems to be, as we see these more aspirational lifestyles and ideas kind of pushed out in our faces all the time, I feel like people's perceptions of whether it's true or not, I don't really know, but of how much they're being judged and how much like the pressure is on them keeps going up. I feel like moms are under more pressure than ever.
Yes.
And so I guess the word of caution is just whatever it is you're looking for, it's out there. So don't settle for a group that makes you feel bad about yourself or where you feel like you can't keep up. I mean, your people are online. They are there somewhere. You might have to work to find them, but they do exist. So
no, I absolutely agree. And my other kind of final tip on this was start by nurturing like one friendship or one activity, because I have found, and I meant to mention this earlier, that I've never been a big group of friends person, but the times that I have found myself in a group, it's usually because of a very close friendship with one or two people. And then they might be more group oriented, or they might be the organizers. Or so I end up in a group by default, but it wasn't because I went looking for that group. It was because I connected with one person or I started one, you know, activity or behavior that led to the group. So it's almost just like flip-flopping what your goal is. Instead of having a goal to have a tribe, have a goal to really nurture one or two relationships and you may find yourself in a tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like we said before, you can always work backward, and that is online as well. You can be part of a big tribe and then you can choose to really narrow it down and just invest in one or two people you really connect with. When I was, when Jacob was two and Isaac was an infant, like 2 or 3 months old, I lived in an apartment complex, and it was like a really depressing apartment complex. It was like the only thing you could walk to was a Walmart, and it was in this really sort of soulless suburb, and I was surrounded by just shopping plazas.
Yeah.
It was pretty bleak. And I was on the third floor.
Yeah.
And as anybody who knows, and it was not an elevator building. So if anybody who's lived in a third floor walk up with a toddler and a newborn is feeling my pain right now.
Yes.
And it was Minnesota. Oh. And it was February. Anyway.
Yeah. So, set the stage.
So I'm setting the stage here. It was basically from the time, well, that whole first winter after he was born, we lived there. So anyway, I was pretty low. That was when I was really working hard to try to like put together this big group. But even that, I mean, just to get to them was a hassle, a huge hassle. And the weather that year was bad. And so I ended up just meeting this woman who lived down the hall. And she had two little kids around the same age as mine. And we had like nothing in common, like nothing.
Except your hallway.
Except our hallway. Like we didn't listen to the same music. We didn't have the same parenting style. Like we just didn't really have anything to talk about except our kids. And in a very general way, like kind of a real roundabout way, because we didn't want to get too into the nitty gritty of parenting because we were doing it so differently. But I will say that saved my life. Like I knew her door was always open, sometimes literally, sometimes she would just leave her door open. And so like I would just wander down there and just have another human being to like share space with who was an adult. I remember when I was really depressed for like a month and I just let my house go. It was really bad. And I remember her coming over and being like that friend who comes in and opens the shades and is like, we're going to take care of this.
Oh,
like, you know,
like, it was magical.
It was super magical. And I felt like for the first time in my life, like I couldn't keep up with stuff. And that was really hard. Like I was really struggling, and having her come by and do that was amazing. And also made me feel super vulnerable. She figured out there was a reason I hadn't had her over in a month. Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, why are you always coming here and you're never having me at your place? And then she kind of just took it in hand and figured it out. And that was really, really helpful.
I think from the outside, when you're a new mom, this neighbor thing seems more complicated because you've got babies sleeping inside. You've got nap schedules. You've got your kids aren't on bikes yet. Or if they are, you're like, you have to watch them at every second. So I also think if this is something you aspire to and you're not getting it yet, it might be a stage of life thing. I mean, My neighbor tribe is amazing. That's the one group I would truly call a tribe right now, because the group text is always going. Like, anyone we can, I mean, the number of things we've asked to borrow from each other is like, the running list is like hilarious. Like, can yeah. I borrow, like, does anyone have whatever, a dog bather system? No. But like, we just,
no, I'm not giving that up.
No, that's fine. But the kids run around, the garage doors are open. It's really idyllic. But I remember when my kids were really little, there was a group kind of like that in my Arizona neighborhood. And I just was totally watching from the outside because I couldn't figure out how, like, I had two babies in a stroller and like one on a trike who couldn't even pedal. Like, it's just, so I guess I'll just say, just be patient, because that might be a stage of life thing. It might not. If everyone has babies and is out in the cul-de-sac, maybe you'll have the neighbor friends when in your new mom stage too. But I didn't find it till a little later. All right, so we're back, and the next episode we're going to talk about came as a surprise to both of us, that it came mm-hmm. up in you guys' favorites.
All right, so shall we get to the one that we thought was so funny?
I mean, you guys, come on. Your favorite episode is about dirty laundry.
So it's episode 167. I listened to this episode and was just like squirming at how much it's me doing a lot of the talking, and I talk so much about my laundry, but that's apparently, you guys liked it. I don't know. I talked about everything from like not getting stains out to the sorting and like when I sort and when I fold. And so did you, Sarah. I just feel like I was particularly gabby in
well,
this one.
I think sometimes we're more sensitive to that when we listen to ourselves. I'm sure that's true. Talked a lot too. Well, I mean, we had listeners comment that they listened to it more than once. And Rachel on Instagram just said what she liked about it was that, like, no matter what, like, no one's doing it right. There's no like one way to do laundry.
You're not going to learn how to do the laundry from this episode. Let's just be clear. Like, if your idea is to come out with like whiter whites, brighter brights, and softer linens,
that's
just
not this.
Keep moving. Right. Keep moving. Move along. You're not going to get that here. No.
I think because we talked about like kind of our dirty little secrets, like the piles, how like I don't really use my linen closet. I just have a whole bunch of sheets stuffed in a permanent laundry basket, like things like that. We just aired the literal dirty laundry and the figurative dirty laundry. So we have a couple of funny clips of us talking
and
about
underwear. And they're about socks and underwear, just as a warning.
Just, I mean, it's going to get real deep.
For a couple of years, well, no, actually for a good long chunk of time, 5 to 7 years, the system was, there was this brand of socks, like, I think it was the gold toe ones.
Okay.
And you could buy them with one stripe, two stripes, or three stripes. And I think it was based on size. Like the bigger ones had three stripes. So the funny thing is I had to fudge it a little bit because whatever kid was wearing the three stripe socks wasn't actually quite big enough for those yet.
You're a
three striper now. And I did that for a while. It was a long time. What's happened since is that everyone now has their own sock, I will say, personality, their own sock type. Mm-hmm. And they don't follow my rules anymore. William likes to wear man socks. Like he will. So when we were sharing a household with John, he was always digging John's socks out and wearing them. And that would make John crazy. And Owen doesn't like to wear matching socks and he only likes crazy socks. Uh-huh. So he wouldn't wear, like, if I bought him plain old gold toe socks and expected him to wear matches in pairs, he never would.
Okay.
So that didn't, it's just all, it all fell apart about 3 or 4 years ago. So now we used to have this huge sock basket that everyone would pick through. And we really scaled that down. And now it's in this much smaller, like, metal container that I had, like a metal basket, which is probably supposed to be hanging on a wall someplace holding fruit or something. Like, I think I bought it, I don't know, like from IKEA or something, right? But now it holds the socks. And I just have very few pair. And I just wash them more. Like, the fewer socks, the better. Owen and Isaac's underwear look very similar to me. They're both like these oddly teeny boxer briefs. I know Isaac's 18 and Owen's 12, but they shrink down. Like when you get them out of the wash, they kind of all look the same to me. And I have to sometimes study them to tell whose underwear is whose.
Which, don't you find that kind of annoying? Like we have a few sets of things where it drives me bananas that I have to like look up close. And I've thought about, okay, the next time I purchase, I'm going to go color coding. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I tried that and I keep forgetting.
Yeah, exactly. Allegra's getting to wear her socks and underwear could be mine, but that's not as hard because I know my own clothes.
Yeah, and you know,
it's
just,
it's not the same as having like a whole bunch of little boys like you did. And then because of the spacing of my kids, it hasn't been an issue. But I feel like even a listener asked us about that one time when we did a clothing episode. Like,
well, yeah, I tried to color code underwear, and the problem is the store, without fail, the store won't have the color you hope to get.
Yeah.
At some point, in like the, you're going to go there in the right kid. Size.
Yeah.
They're going to have only that color in the other kid's size. Like every time I've tried to implement a sock or underwear system like that, it can be fail proof for a little bit, but it always falls apart in the end.
All right. So another episode that came up quite a bit, another interview episode, was my conversation with Kelly Hiltz. Kelly is a listener of ours, and she also is a podcaster. She has the Chatty Sisters podcast, and she's a kindergarten teacher. One thing I loved is I love bringing on parenting experts and people who've written books, and we will continue to do that and bring you guys like really highly qualified expert voices, because sometimes that is the best thing. But sometimes, don't you feel like, Megan, it's nice just to pick the brain of like a regular,
mom.
We both
had friends and family members and stuff on the show. And I think that's really fun too.
Yeah. And so Kelly is a kindergarten. She's a kindergarten teacher. I don't want to say just a kindergarten teacher, but she's, that's her role. She's also a mom of two little kids. And so I got to pick her brain about being ready for kindergarten and the things that she sees in her kindergarten class. Set mom's minds at ease who have kids who are freaking out about getting their kid ready for kindergarten. That was the time of year when we aired this, is that time when people are starting to think, should I redshirt them? Should I hold them back a year? And so we talk about all of those things. But a couple of listeners mentioned that not only was this super helpful in kind of easing their anxieties, but that one of the biggest myths that Kelly tried to dispel was this idea of academic readiness being so important. Like they've got to know all their letters. They've got to be, starting to read and all of this stuff. And what she talks about in the clip that you're going to hear is that it's so much more about their kind of their independent skills and their life skills, which I think, Megan, that just jives with how you and I think about kids anyway. It's not about can they write their name on a straight line.
They're writing their name. Usually they're going to get there. They're going to get that. But there's all these other soft skills and foundational things that we sometimes like skip past or gloss over or don't think about. So,
And it should make you feel really good as a mom, because you can help a kid with those things. You can't force a 5-year-old to read who's not ready to read, but you can teach them to put on their coat to get them ready in the way that Kelly talks about. So it's possible that we've had listeners who didn't listen to this one because their kids are really tiny, but now you're thinking, oh, maybe I do want to know what my kid will need to get ready for kindergarten. So we'll listen to that one now. When we brainstormed this episode, I said, Kelly, I don't want people to think they have to do flashcards with their 3- and 4-year-olds. And you're like, neither do I. So let's talk about
flashcards.
Yeah. When we talk about kindergarten readiness, we're talking about this in a really encouraging, accessible way. We're not talking about teaching your kid to learn to read before kindergarten. So what are we talking about in terms of readiness? Yeah.
So I think one of the biggest things to get your child ready for kindergarten or look at to see if they're ready is actually more of like the independent skills, like just life independence. Like, can they put on their own shoes, their own coats? Maybe not like fully zip themselves, but like by the beginning of kindergarten, they should really be zipping their coat themselves if possible.
Okay.
Even like going to the bathroom, like I was just listening to your episode about, like other adults, and you guys were talking about like other adults wiping them, but like in kindergarten at public school, at least we can't do that.
Sure.
And I often have kids ask me like, can you wipe me? And I'm like, yeah, no, I can't. So like they need to at least be able to, like, I'm not saying they're amazing wipers. Like I get it. I have a 4-year-old, but like at least enough to get themselves through the day so that you can like kind of fix the situation when they get home. Yeah. So like that kind of stuff is more important. And I also think like, like being able to open some of their stuff for their lunch, like even their willingness to do it. So like a lot of kids like can't physically open like a bag of cheddar bunnies, but if they're willing, if the teacher says like, here are the scissors, go over and cut it, like, will they actually do it or will they keep asking?
It doesn't shock them that it's their responsibility. Like they may not be totally competent, but they've understood that they should be or that they could be.
Exactly.
Okay, Sarah, I'm really excited to set this last one up because I know for myself, we probably did 2 or 3 episodes this year where I felt nervous about them going out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of them because we both really exposed ourselves and our mistakes. Like our mom fails, which we even talked about the fact that like hashtag mom fail is kind of has become this like trope or this like meme
yeah. that kind of can minimize how badly you yeah. feel. And it's episode 157. We got a lot of requests for this one. And we talked about just all the, like, so many of the ways that we have messed up as parents. And these are real fails too, not just like stupid things like, oh, I burned the chicken or whatever. Right. Like these are real things where we know we screwed up.
Well, and here's the thing. When we prepped this episode, I actually thought it was going to be kind of funny. Like I thought it was going to be us kind of.
And then I cried. I cried a couple times.
It was very almost uncomfortable. And I didn't expect that because I thought it was going to be with, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you're like, oh, wasn't I naive? I can't believe I did that. Like, ha ha, pat each other on the back. And what we realized is like, there are really raw feelings built up. Yes. And even if we can completely forgive ourselves, give ourselves grace, we know that we were doing the best we could and that it was just a silly mistake or we didn't know any better at the time. But even with that, it was really raw to talk through these. So I think the clip that we're going to play you is sort of like our, it's like our sum up thoughts about mom fails in general. It comes from toward the end of the episode.
You should go back and listen to the whole episode because we like probably each laid out five ways.
Yeah.
And the way that we structured the episode, I also remember was really interesting. We set up like the kind, we each had a kind of fail in each section. Remember that?
You're right.
And it was like the time we thought we could do something the way we used to and then learned the hard way we couldn't. That was one of the fails. Or like the time we freaked out on our kid, like we overreacted to something.
The time we didn't trust our instincts, which is like all of mine.
The time we, the time we didn't trust our kid, like, like really got deep. And there's so like, there's so much like shame and sadness, like kind of wrapped up in that, even though they are kind of, can be kind of funny stories. Like it's just, this one for me was really powerful. I would actually recommend everyone goes back and listens to this episode all the way through. After they hear, which I think what you were setting up as the clip is going to be kind of like a summary of our high level thoughts about mom fails in general, but like, it's worth just going to listen to how much we've dropped the ball because so will you and every other mom that you know.
So will you. And fail, I think we did get some feedback of using the word fail almost makes it sound like you could have, like motherhood is something that you can either succeed or fail at. And of course, that's not what we believe. The fail is the feeling that you have, right? Like that's the, it's the label we put on ourselves. It's not that empirically any of us is able to fail at this, but that's the, that is the pit in your stomach feeling.
Yes.
So, all right, well, we'll play our wise words, but yeah, if you want to hear about the time that I made my child sleep on basically a bed of nails, cause I didn't believe her that the bed was uncomfortable. You should go listen to the episode.
You know, I think that really what it's like, and I heard it in your voice and I felt it like in myself, is there's this deep shame around things that sometimes aren't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Like these are really big deals to us, but none of my kids have brought any of these things up since. Like it's not like, and some of them, you know, are potentially a big deal. And you learn from it and you go on. And I just feel like, I don't know that there's any way around the shame. I think the fact that we feel it is evidence that we're good parents, you know, and that we probably wouldn't make that same exact mistake twice, but we might make another mistake in the same arena.
And I want to say something about the danger, because a lot of our stories involved potential big dangers. Yeah. I think one of the reasons those feel so raw is like, we are constantly keeping out our kids out of mortal danger, especially when they're little. You're doing it all the time. But the times when it's right in front of you is when you have a potentially close call like that. So it's, if anything, you know, it's a, obviously we count our blessings. We know that bad things can happen all the time. And those little moments feel like big fails because it kind of reminds us that that's always our job. Like we're always having to do that. But then, yeah, when your kid is face down in the water, it feels like the weight of all of that responsibility is in that moment. So,
And I think it also, you know, the fact that enough of those stood out in our minds that those were moments of potential danger where actually nothing happened.
Right.
And then there's probably a million others you don't even know, like another times that your kids were potentially in danger. You didn't even see it happen.
Exactly.
It just shows you that there's so many potential dangers in the world and usually things still work out. Like, and that's not to say don't try or like, you know, don't ever protect or supervise, but more like, I think we all have a room to like take a deep breath. The world's not maybe as dangerous as it feels when you're keeping someone, literally keeping them alive.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think that's a big anxiety trigger for a lot of new moms. And so if that's something that you're struggling with, definitely make time to deal with that. I remember we used to be around swimming pools a lot because we lived in Arizona, and I would wake up in the middle of the night having either dreams or just like bad hallucinations about pool safety after we'd been at a pool. And it's almost like you have to give yourself the time and space you need to kind of process that, because there's a lot of kind of post-traumatic stress or just anxiety that goes along with that kind of danger.
And I think it can be free floating. Sometimes my sister, I remember telling me about when her kids were little, she would have these terrible fantasies in the middle of the night about them getting trapped in like old refrigerators.
Wow.
And then, you know, that's a very specific thing. Like, kids aren't going to stumble across an old refrigerator every day, but I think it was probably more, if I'm, you know, armchair psychologizing her, it was probably like unknown, something she can't control. It's not something she'd have in her house, but maybe they could be. And it was when they were starting to get old enough that they were going out in the world more. And also just like during a very stressful time for her personally. Yeah. So it's like all those things can kind of manifest.
Yeah.
In that. Yeah.
Yeah. Deep breath.
Okay, guys, this has been really fun.
Really,
Sarah,
fun.
I really enjoyed getting to go back and listen to these episodes. We're putting out so much content right now that I feel like I start to get like amnesia about what we've done.
Oh, completely. Even just putting the list together was like, I was like, whoa.
What? We talked about what? So it was really fun for me to go back and hear all this stuff. And I'm excited that, you know, new listeners, maybe who haven't made it that far back in the archives, get a new taste of it. And then you guys who have listened to every single episode, it's kind of your reward that we just like delivered you some fun moments from the last year without you having to go search for them.
Some nuggets, so nuggets of wisdom.
I hope you enjoyed the nuggets. And I also would just, I mean, if you guys wanted to make our like holiday hearts very happy and we could make like one request of you, I think it would just be that you share this episode with a friend. Cause I think this episode is a great like bite size sort of just example of what this show is all about. And I would love for people to get to know us through something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be huge. And also, if you do that, shoot us an email and tell us if you feel like it. Sometimes it's hard. We don't really, there's no paper trail, so we don't know when you do that, but we appreciate every time that you do tell a friend or show a friend how to download a podcast, because that's another thing that sometimes happens is not everybody knows even how to get a podcast.
Right. So yes.
Every time you do that, you are just opening up a whole new world for moms, not just our show, but podcasts in general. All right. So Megan, this makes me so excited to plan content for 2019. It's like got my wheels spinning, but I'm not going to put that on you until we actually return in 2019 and start, you know, putting out.
We're going to take a little bit of a break, but that's great.
A break like 5 days.
So when I say you and I are taking a break, I mean, you and I are taking a break, but the production, listeners will not experience a break. We will not give you a break, listeners.
No.
You are going to continue to listen to us whether you like it or not. But we're going to take a week where we don't have to record. That's not bad. It's better than we've done.
Yeah, that's true.
This year.
That's true.
But I'm really looking forward to 2019, guys. I want more, bigger, better. Like, I just want to find new ways to reach all of you and new moms as well that aren't listening yet. And maybe in new ways. You know? Like, it's kind of funny because we came from blogging and then podcasting is like this new thing. And it's like, we have to go kind of double down on podcasting, but it's just another medium. It's just another way to reach people. And so now we can take this awesome community that we've put together and like, we can all reach each other in different ways. And I love podcasting is probably the one that you guys all like the best, but who knows? Maybe some of you are readers too.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of ideas. And also, we should tell everybody that the first couple of episodes are already planned for 2019. Here I go. We have an episode on January 1st. And then, of course, the following Tuesday, the 8th. And those will both be kind of new year, new intention focused in different ways. So just make sure you're subscribed. If you are brand new, if you are one of the new listeners who was sent this episode, make sure you're subscribed so you get that dropping in your feed on January 1st. And we will talk to you guys in the new year.
Talk to you soon. Sarah, I have been having just the best time making my new podcast, The Tease Made. I launched back in November, and so far I've covered topics like staying warm on cold winter walks, nurturing creativity, how to be a great host, and even Nordic secrets to loving winter.
Well, you know, I am fan number one of the Teas Made. It's got such a cozy vibe, and it seems like you've really hit your stride in covering topics like wellness, self-care, comforting rituals and routines, and home and family life.
Just look for the Teas Made with Megan Francis wherever you get your podcasts, or head to theteasmade.com to find all the episodes.
The Mom Hour is brought to you by partners like Chatbooks. Chatbooks makes it beyond easy to create beautiful photo books by importing your digital photos from anywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Google Photos, or directly from your phone. The books come in a variety of sizes with beautiful cover options and binding styles to choose from, and they start at just $15. Plus, we have a great deal just for our listeners. Use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20% off your purchase. Just download the Chatbooks app and use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20%.